Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
The chances of catching COVID-19 from somebody outdoors would appear to be very low, according to new figures released by the Health Protection Surveillance Centre. The data provided in response to a query from the Irish Times showed that outdoor transmission accounts for 0.1% of the state's COVID-19 cases. What that means in real numbers is 262 cases out of over 230,000 recorded in the state up to March 24th this year. But how robust are those numbers? To take a further look at this, I'm joined on the line by Orla Hegarty, architect and assistant professor at the School of Architecture, Planning and Environmental Policy, and Patricia Carney, professor of epidemiology at the School of Public Health at UCC. Orla Hegarty, if I can go to you first of all, this is something that you've been talking about, well, ventilation indoors for quite a long time now. So it'll comes no surprise to you that outdoors is markedly safer.
Yes, it isn't a surprise. And I suppose it comes down to our knowledge now of how the disease is transmitting. We now know that the risk of catching it from hands on surfaces is very low. The Centre for Disease Control in the US are saying it's 1 in 10,000 chance. So the vast majority of people are catching COVID by inhaling infected air. So if you're outdoors, obviously you're breathing clean air. And although the numbers that we have from Ireland are quite limited in what they've been able to gather because they're not backwards tracing, it's borne out by all the information we have internationally. And in fact, I was just looking at, there's a database of about 2,000 international super spread events that have been logged now. And out of that 2,000, about 50 have a question mark about whether they're indoors or outdoors, but none of them have been attributed to outdoor super spread.
Okay, so you're raising and answering the problem here in one go, really, because there was a question mark over these, wasn't there? Because we've only really recently got to 7-day reverse contact tracing. So the figures themselves aren't exactly that robust, are they?
I don't think the data from Ireland is, but it is in line with what we know internationally, both from data in other countries and other super spread events that have been logged. But we also know it from the statistics internationally. China tracked over 1,200 people who were infected last spring, and they only found that three were infected outdoors of that 1,200, and they were people who were in close conversation one-to-one. So obviously there is still a risk in close conversation, and there is very much a risk around this of people sharing transportation, going indoors and sharing toilet areas. So outdoor events need a lot of protections around them to make sure that people still realise that close conversation can be high risk, and that sharing a car or a taxi or a bus to get there can be very high risk.
So looking at all of these international studies then, does it make it something of a slam dunk for you about changes to restrictions on outdoor activities?
I think we need to be careful about it, but I think that the science is there now to support it. But it's also a really good clue as to how we make indoors safe, because if you're safe in clean air outdoors, well, then you're safe in clean air indoors. And we have the tools now to monitor clean air, and we have the knowledge and the tools to make all buildings down to low risk by using those tools. So it's very good news all around. People are very reliant on the vaccine program, which is great that it's rolling out. But we have a lot of other strategies that can be done in parallel.
Patricia Carney, Professor of Epidemiology, is also joining us now. Do stay with us, though, Orla. Do you share her concerns, Patricia, about the robustness of the Irish figures?
Yes, morning, Philip. And I agree really with Orla that the pandemic clearly isn't being driven by outdoor spread, but certainly our data is far from perfect. As you've mentioned, we haven't been doing source investigation, or at least outside of our regional departments of public health. So it's likely that in terms of the ratio of the indoor to outdoor may be exaggerated by some of the bias in our surveillance data. And the other thing I suppose I would mention is that at the moment, we are at level 5, so we don't have the kind of high risk events in high incidence settings, things like musical festivals, crowded stadium, you know, that may potentially, even in an outdoor setting, sort of drive the outbreak. But despite that, we know that I, you know, completely agree with what Orla is saying, and the data internationally shows us that outdoor transmission is much less common. You know, it's definitely much safer to be outside. But I think Orla and I and many others from the outset have been saying there's no sort of shiny solution here. There's not one magic thing that's going to get us out of this. So, you know, the vaccinations are important. Being outside is important. But, you know, we need to not forget the other things that also confer protection, like maintaining physical distancing, wearing masks. So even when you're outside, you know, if you're up close and personal, very up close and personal to somebody, even the outdoor air, you know, won't necessarily protect you. And as Orla mentioned, you know, we need to think about the type of air as well. So whether it's stagnant air or, you know, if there's a good breeze blowing. So, yeah, you know, I suppose use all the information that's available to us at present.
As she suggests, though, the other real issue here is the associated activities that come with doing things out of doors. I mean, it's a lovely looking day out there, but it is so perishingly cold that it wouldn't be long before you would be driven indoors if you were socialising with people. And that is, I suppose, where the risks arise.
Absolutely. And that's the kind of thing that we need to think about, say, as we open up, for example, and permit sports to be occurring outside. You know, if we have people, teams travelling in cars together or going for a coffee together afterwards, you know, that's when the risk might occur. So we need to be really mindful of those risks and minimise them.
This reverse contact tracing now, is it going to answer this question more conclusively about how safe outdoors is?
So I suppose when we talk about the reverse contact tracing, I think we need to be careful and explain what we're talking about. What we've been doing to date is if we think about COVID as kind of transmission chains, and we're interested in who somebody has passed the infection on to. And that's what we've been doing with our contact tracing. In the reverse, we're actually asking a different question. So what we're asking is, well, where did that case get the infection from? And it's much more difficult. It's not just about finding the sources. It's really doing an investigation, detailed kind of public health risk assessment to try and figure out, well, is that where the infection could have arisen? And so I think it is positive that we're starting to do that, but it really requires the kind of expert local knowledge that exists in our regional departments of public health. And so I think it'll be quite some time before we get to resolve some of the mysteries around the community transmission. In Australia, they use the term mystery cases for community transmission. And I think it is quite a useful way of thinking about the challenges of figuring out where somebody has actually picked up the infection, if we don't, for example, know that they've been in close contact with a confirmed case or in a setting like a hospital or a workplace where we know that there have been infections.
Orla, when you think about where we were this time last year, we have made huge adaptations. But when you look at how people are interacting in indoor settings, do we still need to go further?
We do. I think there's a very poor understanding of how the virus has been transmitted. I certainly know from speaking to people and even from listening to experts in the media, often they don't seem to understand just the physics and chemistry of indoor transmission and how you know, air isn't a vacuum. It's full of chemicals that are moving, and we can monitor that and we could make it safer. I think if there is backward tracing now with cases, it's really important that we look at buildings. If this was a waterborne disease, we would be taking samples of the water when the track and trace is happening and when buildings are being identified. I think it's very important that information be gathered and that people be given advice. In a lot of cases, it's very simple to improve the ventilation by leaving the front and back door open on the shop, by turning off the air curtain maybe over the front of the shop that's there for drafts, and by turning off the air conditioning units that sometimes people have on walls and ceilings that don't bring in fresh air, that just blow the air around. So there are lots of simple things, and I think if the public health teams were resourced and given the right kind of expertise, we could very quickly start to pinpoint the problems, and then other people could prevent it happening.
There's a lot of shops with Perspex screens, but anecdotally you hear about an awful lot of people standing behind those screens without wearing a mask. Is that safe?
It's not safe, no. And I mean, the public health rules still say that people can be behind Perspex in a shop or on a reception desk, those people are not safe. So if you think of the virus in the air being a little bit like cigarette smoke, you would certainly smell a cigarette if somebody was smoking in front of a counter, regardless of whether you had a Perspex screen. So it's very important, I think, at the moment, particularly with the variants that are more transmissible, that everybody wear a mask indoors, whether you're sharing an office with somebody all day, whether you're in a school building or in a shop, everybody should be wearing a mask indoors now.
Mm. Patricia, Orla raises the variants with increased transmissibility there. Do we know anything about the rates of transmission of those new variants outdoors, or do the same principles of physics and chemistry that apply to the original strain apply to the new variants?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I mean, we don't have the kind of data, as we've already talked about the limitations of the data that we have in terms of outdoor versus indoor, never mind looking specifically at the new variants. But I suppose what we do know is that the new variants are more transmissible, and no reason to believe that that would be any different outdoors than indoors. But, you know, as we've said, outdoor transmission is much rarer. And of course, there's also lots of other benefits of being outside. But, you know, we do need to be aware now that the new variants are more highly transmissible. And I suppose we need to think about that in all settings.
OK, so I don't get from you that you're racing to advocate for the opening up of golf courses just straight away.
So I think, you know, the issue is golf courses, tennis courts, gap play pitches. You know, I think it's great for people to be outside. Physical activity is really important for our physical and mental health. It's how do you get to the golf course? What do you do either side of it? That's what we need to be really careful about. You know, when you're chatting, before you, I don't know anything about golf, hit the ball. You know, how close you are to the other person. It's sort of being mindful of the risk in those different settings.
Okay. Patricia Carney and Orla Hegarty, thank you both very much.